Evening and welcome to minute five of season eight of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg directed classic award winning film Saving Private Ryan 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week, but he will be back in the future, is Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
I just started up over the side of the podcast. I'm sorry.
You throw up on the side or you throw up inside?
Over the side. Over the side.
Well, most of them are throwing up over the side. Most of these guys are not throwing up over the side. They're throwing up inside.
But the first one we see throwing up is throwing up outside. So that's I'm at least being that conscientious.
Okay. Well, it's nice that you're being considerate.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's what it comes down to.
No vomiting on Mike.
makes sense. So minute five begins with the location being revealed and ends with Mike getting ready to high five. So we ended things yesterday with us taking a trip through time to June 6, 1944, but we didn't know where. And today we actually get to find out where we're now located. And it's a very strange location. It's Dog Green Sector, Omaha Beach. Now, do you have any idea why it is called Dog Green Sector?
Well, I know some of them were split into different colors. So were three areas for dog. And they did it based on... This is going back to 20 years ago at school. No, I can't. I'm just going to save time. I cannot remember. Please tell me.
Okay. Well, first of all, Dog Green Sector was just an area of Omaha Beach where the landing was where the 116th Infantry Regiment and 29th Infantry Division were landed there. Okay, it's just a way of separating the various sections of the beach to know who's going where. That's what it comes down to. Sure. You do have Able Company, from which landed at this section, which had 96% casualty rate during the landing. You know, in general, you know, you identify each company by its letter and stuff like that. So Dog Company is one of the letters, which is why it's a little strange. You'd think to yourself, okay, so Dog Company will be a part of the Dog Green Sector or whatever it is, but they weren't, or they might have been part of it, but they weren't. You know, it was Able Company that was that landed there. So it's not 100% clear as to you know the exact way that it was all split up. Again, when I talk with Paul Woodage in 6 months from now, he'll probably be able to give me a little more insight as to how they split it up. But again, when you have such a large scale invasion happening, so each group has to have its own area and it's marked off. So the idea here is okay, you know, we're gonna mark off this section, and maybe dog just refers to the fact that it was the fourth of the green sectors.
Yeah,
using, okay, you know that again, I don't know enough about how they split everything up on the beach as to who goes where and stuff like that. But I think that makes sense that it was just that section. So I mean, if I were to look up about what Dog Green Sector is, Able Company, they were the first ones to land in that section, and they landed there at 6:30 in the morning on D-Day. And because it was opposite the majority of the troops, the German troops that were there, that's why they basically got decimated.
Yeah,
it just happened to be that was the section that they were, marked to go through. I mean, I was able to find a map that said the different areas. You have Dog Green, you have Charlie, and you have Dog White. So it seems to me that it is connected to the it is like the alphabetical portions, you know, saying, okay, you're going to, this third section we're going to call Charlie, and this section is going to be Dog, and we're going to have Dog Green and Dog White. Why it's Dog Green and why it's Dog White, that also, what they basically did was is that there were sections of the beach that were delineated by, you have Charlie Green, sorry, Charlie Dog, Easy, Fox, okay, and of those, they split them up also. So you had the area that Dog was taking care of, that you know, the fourth section. So you have Dog Green, Dog White, and Dog Red. And then you have for Easy, you know, which is E is the fifth one. So you have also Green, White, and Red. And then Fox, you also have the same thing, Green, White, and Red. So that's how they, you know, broke things up. They decided, you know, that you know, the way that they were gonna decide which companies are attacking which area, it just, you know, made it a little easier for them to identify the type of stuff. So that basically here, you know, the Dog Green is the area where Miller and his men are set to go take care of things. So yeah. So again, we get some nice shots of these Czech hedgehogs showing us, you know, how fortified the area potentially is. And as then we get a shot of a boat that is going through some very, very, I guess, high waves, also because it's going at a high speed. Okay, do you know the name of this vehicle that's being used?
It's a boat.
Okay, I
no, I don't.
Yes, Jay, it is a boat because it is floating. Yes.
No, I don't know specifically, no.
Okay, this is known as a Higgins boat. It was a Lanny craft that was used.
That's half right.
Yes, you were half right. You got the boat part right. You get credit for that, Jay.
Half a point.
There you go. Dupois. So it was used for amphibious landings during World War II. It's mostly constructed of plywood. And they were able to ferry platoon-sized men going basically at 12 speed of 12 knots, which is approximately 14 miles per hour or 22 kilometers an hour. And basically they would, you know, climb off the large transports using nets, and they would land into this little Higgins boat. And then, you know, it would take them to where they were going. It was designed by a man named Andrew Higgins. And these are the type of boats that were used in swamps and marshes and things like that. How many of these do you think they built for the Allies during World War II?
Oh, 100, 200?
23,358.
Okay.
You're close. That's right. So the official designation of the ship was an LCVP, which is a Landing Craft Vehicle Personnel. And it was nicknamed the Papa Boat or the Peter Boat. There was another one called an LCM that was known as a Mike Boat. So it was just because it had the P at the end that they would refer to this as a Peter Boat or a Papa Boat. Sure. Obviously, the design is not very effective when you're being shot at, as we will find out over the next 2 weeks.
Yes, it feels like it's missing some kind of
protection.
Barrier at the at the front end that you can exit the boat without exposing yourself.
Well, also the top, it's not covered at all.
Yes, that too.
Yeah, that doesn't really work. I mean, Eisenhower said that if it wasn't for Andrew Higgins, they wouldn't have won the war. You know, because of the him building this craft to use. So it's pretty interesting. I don't know how many of them are still around these days. Probably not too many, because if they were made out of wood, they probably didn't last very long. Especially if we're
Yeah.
talking, 80 years. I don't know how many of them would have lasted over the course of 80 years. There are a few that you can find in various museums.
Yeah, I was gonna say there must be some
Yeah.
out there.
Obviously, in The Longest Day and in this movie, they show these. So makes sense that there was a movie from 1956 called Away All Boats, which also showed how they were used during attacks and things like that. So we get a shot of a whole bunch of these. We can see at the beginning at least four, but later on we see a lot more. But there's a lot of water splashing onto all these guys that are on the ship. And as you mentioned, at 12 seconds in, we see a guy puking over the side. That must be Jay.
It may be. Well, I'm pretty good, seasickness wise. But I was listening to
You're pretty good,
a.
meaning you do get seasick, or you're pretty good that you don't get seasick.
I don't get seasick. My dad does, which is odd, which is un. It's not great because he used to have to get the boat to go to work every day. But that's fine. So he got over it quickly. But I was listening to a podcast. I was there too, which is an excellent podcast about people who were. There and present for big scenes in films, but weren't necessarily the center point of said scenes. And Dale Dye was the guest for that, and he talked a little bit about Platoon and Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers. And he mentioned that whilst they were filming this, some of the people just started throwing up, and so they decided like the ones who were throwing up in the boat were scripted. The ones who were throwing up outside the boat were not.
Oh, wow.
And they were just like, people started to get seasick because they're out on the water and it's choppy, and they just said, just throw up over the side of the boat, just do it, it's fine, just do it, and we'll keep rolling. And so that's what they did.
Oh,
Which
wow.
is interesting.
Yeah, I wrote to Dale Dye. He didn't respond.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was on this podcast, I think it was 7 years ago at this point, and he was promoting the film he was directing, called No Better Place to Die, which to date has not come out yet. And all
Oh, wow.
IMDb says is that it's written and directed by Dale Dye and stars Gary Sinise, and that's all we have. So it's about the 82nd Airborne Division and the first 3 days of the Normandy invasion. But I don't know how successful he's been at making it beyond that.
Well, apparently not successful
Yeah,
enough if it's been 7 years
not
and it hasn't
very.
been released yet.
Yes, and I think he was on that podcast to promote it, and that was 7 years
Interesting.
ago. Yeah, but he's worked on a lot of war films, including this one.
And it's interesting if you look at the numbers on the side of the boats, they're pretty much the same numbers, just the final number at the end is a little different. They're sequential.
Yes, that makes sense.
And again, once again, great camera work. The way they really make us feel as if we're right there watching this attack going on.
Yeah, I mean, every element of this opening 25 minutes is impeccable. But like Janusz Kaminski's cinematography is up there as one of the MVPs of it all. Like, just as you say,
Correct.
keeping us right there in it. It gets once they actually like get into the water next week, even more so. But yeah, it's great. It's you're right there. This is one of the greatest sequences to watch, one of the worst to live through, I'm certain.
Correct. Which again is testament to the fact that we talked on Monday about the Oscars. I mean, he won the Oscar for cinematography here. I mean, there's no doubt that that is one of the best aspects of the movie.
Agreed.
The giving us the feel that we are right there.
Yeah, you never lose sense of where you are, unless you're kind of supposed to lose sense of where you are.
Correct.
Like it's, yeah, not you don't always like later action sequences. You don't see the sequence. You're like I'm thinking about the one where Wade dies. Like you don't see that whole skirmish. You just see Upham running up at the end of it. But that's an excellent use. Like you don't need to. You don't need to have seen it. You get it all.
Correct.
You get everything.
That's right.
Everything you need to see. I love
100%.
Upham's my favorite character.
I'm not surprised. But for some reason, I don't think you would act as Upham die as Upham does at the end.
No, I would die.
No, guaranteed. Meaning you wouldn't have you would have let Steamboat Willie live in the end.
I mean, I like to think I would have gone and helped out Ryben, not Ryben, Mellish. Screw Ryben. Gone and helped out Mellish, and so Steamboat Willie not alive at the end. But you know, the truth is, I wouldn't have got off the boat. I would have been killed. I would have gone off the boat, but it would have been falling into the water dead. So,
well, Upham didn't get off the boat, so you don't have to worry about that.
True.
He came in with the second, third, fifth, 20th wave. You know, yeah. There's no way that Upham came in with these waves. Then we get a shot inside of the Higgins boat, and we see a hand that is shaking in a pretty amazing way. The fact that this is acting, you know. Yeah. And the hand then takes a canteen and opens it up. You know, we see the hand still shaking as the character. Whoa, hey, that's Tom Hanks.
Hey, takes there a he is.
Swig. takes a swig of water from the canteen. Yeah, are you familiar with this actor?
Yeah, this is Tom Hanks. And you might be thinking, he's taking a drink here. This means that Tom Hanks is going to do what he does best. He's going to pee at some point in this film, and he never does.
That's true.
It's the only film he's ever, he doesn't pee in. Yeah, he takes a drink. Plot hole.
That's very true. That is a big plot hole. Well, then maybe they cut that scene.
They must have done, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But he talks about someone peeing.
Sure.
He talks about Vecchio, so you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, that counts, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. So Tom Hanks, he's an actor who's been in a few movies. He has, as I mentioned yesterday, he has 100 acting credits as of today. He has 62 producer credits, and he has 7 director credits and 7 writing credits. I think that he's probably best as an actor or a producer, not necessarily as a writer or director. But
I would agree. I mean, you know, he directed an episode of Band of Brothers. It's a good episode.
Yes.
Because they all are. I like That Thing You Do. That's the one time I've seen it. And Larry Crown should be set on fire.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Larry Crown. If the fire I like Greyhound.
If it dampens out, set fire to it again. And just keep doing that forever.
Right. Okay. Have you seen Greyhound, which he wrote?
I have technically seen it, but I don't remember anything about it because it just kind of didn't stick with me at all. So.
No. Okay. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it both times that I saw it. But yeah, he's directed only 7 things according to IMDb. 2 of them are an episode of From the Earth to the Moon and from Band of the Brothers. Larry Crown, That Thing You Do. And then 3 TV show episodes. So he's not a very prolific director, but that's fine because he's a great actor, in my opinion.
Yes, you know, I agree.
He's created some very memorable roles. Not just Forrest Gump, not just John Miller. You know, he's been nominated numerous times for Oscars. He won twice in a row, which is a very rare feat. You know, for Philadelphia and for Forrest Gump, back to back. Again, he's great in this movie. I don't know if I would have necessarily given him an Oscar for the work that he did there, even though he does a great job. Do you remember who won the Oscar instead of him this year?
I looked it up just last night and cannot remember.
Roberto Benigni.
That's the one, yes.
For Life is Beautiful, the crazy guy. Oh,
yes, because he climbed over Tom Hanks on the
that's right. That's right.
Ah, what a guy.
Seriously. The truth is, I think that the snub this year is someone who might have been able to have won it. It probably should have been Jim Carrey for the Truman Show, but the five actors that were nominated were Tom Hanks, Roberto Benigni for Life is Beautiful, Ed Norton for American History X, Ian McKellen for Gods and Monsters, and Nick Nolte for Affliction. So
I don't think Jim Carrey would have won. I love him in
I
Truman
didn't
Show.
say he would have won. I said he deserved to have won. There's a
Sure.
difference.
Okay. Absolutely. I haven't seen Affliction, and I haven't seen Gods and Monsters, but I don't hate Benigni in Life is Beautiful. I think that's a fine nomination. I'm not sure if it's a win. And yeah, American History X, everyone's great in that. But again, is it a win? I don't know. Like watching Shakespeare in Love last night, this to me wasn't the strongest year for nominees for acting wise. Like I think
Okay.
Gwyneth Paltrow won for Best Actress,
Okay.
which she's
Well, again,
fine.
you have to look at who she was up against. She
And
was up
who
against
was promoting
Kate
her?
Blanchett. That's right. Well, that's
That's a whole other
one of the
matter.
reasons. Yeah. I actually just rewatched She Said on Friday, which talks a lot about Gwyneth. So Kate Blanchett, Emily Watson for Hillary and Jackie, Kate Blanchett for Elizabeth. Emily Watson for Hillary and Jackie, Fernanda Montenegro for Central Station, and Meryl Streep for One True Thing. So you're right. It wasn't a very wasn't a very strong list of leading female roles,
And I've
even in
seen none
the.
of those other films. I felt no inclination to watch any of them.
Okay, and even in the Best Actress supporting roles, I mean, you had Judi Dench who won for Shakespeare in Love. And you had Brenda Blythe for Little Voice, which
I think
I'm not a
that's
fan of. Kathy Bates in Primary Colors, who's always fun to watch. Lynn Redgrave for Gods and Monsters, and Rachel Griffiths for Hillary and Jackie. So again, there's no one here who really jumps out where I would say, oh, they did a better job than Judi Dench.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Yeah, supporting actor is a more fun category because you get Truman Show, Ed Harris, you get Jeffrey Rush for another, you get Billy Bob Thornton for A Simple Plan. Who do you reckon if they had to put someone forward from Saving Private Ryan in the best supporting actor, who do you reckon would have got it? Because there's a lot of choice, there's a lot of options.
I don't think so. I honestly don't think there's anybody here who really stands out that I would say, oh, that person should have been nominated.
I'd have been tempted to go Sizemore. I think he's excellent.
I think he's excellent too, but I don't think he I don't think that his character did enough in order for him to have garnered. He wasn't flamboyant enough. Like because you can say, okay, Judi Dench doesn't have very many minutes in
Beats.
Shakespeare in Love, but she stands out.
Yeah, she does a lot
Does
with
Tom
it.
Sizemore stand out? I don't know.
I mean, he does at times, but I get it. He hasn't got that dramatic monologue anywhere. He
That's
just
right.
I love his death fight sequence. It's
Correct.
just
Where he
his
Well, I
his
love where he
reaction to
throws his
getting
helmet.
shot.
I love when he throws his helmet at the guy.
It just the kind of weird jerking his body does when he gets shot is fun. But yeah, I'm not saying he would have won. I'm not saying he would have been nominated, but if I had to put for best supporter, I'd want. But I don't.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That's fair. And so we see Tom Hanks here,
So,
and
no one is
he
forcing him to.
and again we see his face. He does a great job here. They do a great job of the fake out though, because you do believe that this is the old man that we just saw, even though it isn't morphed in or anything like that. They do that nicely, and he just looks around, and they slowly start pulling away from him. And we see the boat shaking back and forth. We see Tom Sizemore next to him put a wad of tobacco in his mouth.
Disgusting.
Very.
Disgusting.
But
Horrible.
what? But what I like about that is that we actually see that he actually has a ring on his finger, meaning that Mike is also married. You know, even though it's never mentioned in the movie.
Yeah, or well, you don't find out a lot about a lot of the people's current status. Like, yeah, well,
No, but we know. I know you don't like him, but we know that Riven is single. We know that Wade is single. You know, we get a little bit of bits of information about people. You know, we know that Carpazzo is single also because he says he wants his letter to go to his dad, as opposed to saying he wants his letter to go to his wife. You know, that
doesn't necessarily you can infer mean from single. That. Like, he just might like he might have a girlfriend he's been with for a short amount of time.
And a girlfriend, possibly, but I'm saying he's not. I'm talking about he's not married. That, okay. That's what I was referring to.
Fair.
You know. Yeah. Again, it's there's no way of knowing, and it doesn't really matter. It's not consequential to the film at all. But I just like the fact that you can see that he has a ring. I mean, I'm curious actually if. Tom Sizemore was married at the time that this movie was made. I know that there's a lot that they talk about in the movie, in the trivia of the movie, that he was having, you know, a lot of drug issues right beforehand, and he was told that if you have any problems, we're gonna boot you out of here, right in the middle. So according to IMDb, he was actually married at the time that they filmed this. Yeah. He was only married for 3 years.
96, 99.
To Maeve Quinlan. From 96 to 99. Yeah. And has two children, Jaden and Jagger. Yeah.
Okay.
So, again, the camera shot moves back and moves out. And we see some of the other characters here. You can't tell if any of them are the men from, you know, that appear later in the movie because... Most of them, we don't get to really see their faces. We just see that you know, two of them are puking up. One of them that pukes, I think, is Mellish, but I'm not 100% sure.
So there's one who looks a bit like Adam Goldberg, one who looks a bit like Vin Diesel, but it's...
Well, the one who looks like Vin Diesel...
Isn't Vin Diesel, yeah.
The one who looks like Vin Diesel has a mark of one stripe on his helmet, which means he's a first lieutenant, which means it's not Kirpas.
Oh, in which case, there's two that look like Vin Diesel, because there's one... behind him on the other side, I thought might have been him as well until he turned his face. But yeah, I mean, right. They're all wearing the same. They're all, you don't see their faces fully. They're all kind of looking, for some reason, stressed and unhappy with the situation. So it's hard to
Correct.
It's hard to pick out people. And also, it's like in a few seconds, most of them are going to die. So it's probably not our guys.
Right. Yeah. Sure. So then we get a shot of the driver of the boat, who, if I understand correctly, he's credited in this movie as the coxswain.
Sure.
A man named Ronald Longridge.
Okay.
But there's, you know, this is his only credit, so I don't really know if it is him or not, because there's no pictures or anything like that. But it makes sense that the type of job that he's doing there is a coxswain.
Yeah.
And he screams and says, clear the ramp. 30 seconds. God be with you. And at this point, Miller takes over and starts giving instructions. And he says, port side stick, starboard side stick, move fast and clear those murder holes. And
murder hole. Then something you don't want to head towards.
No, that's right.
No, turn around. Go back.
That's right. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's just strange the way that he just says that. You know, like I guess a murder hole is where they're shooting from. You know, to try and catch them.
Yeah, must be. Yeah, because they'd get them in castles. Mm-hmm. That's where they'd shoot from, the little slits in castles. Where they'd
yeah.
Things on here. But then, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Right. And basically, at this point, Mike then screams, I want to see plenty of beach between men. And then he lifts up his hand and shows five fingers, as if he's like about to give someone a high five.
Yeah, and, not the right situation to do that. Nothing good has just happened.
Save that.
Probably on not. The beach.
Yeah, Exactly. And we're going to have to find out on Monday what he actually has to say. Maybe he has something interesting to say. I don't know. Not really sure. We'll have to wait and see. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Jay?
No, we covered it. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So, every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed films. So, why don't you tell us how you would rank them? Start with your number five and work your way up.
When we do the last episode each season, you always make me guess yours. I'm interested to see if you can guess my top five Spielberg films.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right, I'm not going to guess what order. I'm not going to guess what order, but okay. I know that, let me say, Jurassic Park is probably going to be your number one. Okay, don't tell me yet. Okay, I'm going to say Jurassic Park is there. Jaws is probably on there. Saving Private Ryan is on there. I'm going to say Schindler's List is on that, is on your list also. That's four. Where am I going to go with the fifth one? Trying to think of what else there could be that I mean, you told me already that you haven't seen Amistad. I know you don't like E.T. I don't think that you're that big of a fan. Oh, what am I, stupid? Raiders. Raiders is on there. That's what I was thinking.
You got three right.
I only got three. Yep. Oh, wow.
So my number five is The Adventures of Tintin, Secret of the Unicorn, which I think is incredibly underrated. And the sequence, there's like one long take of getting the like one big action scene with a tank and a bird and a motorbike. One of Spielberg's best sequences of all of them, I think, is that scene.
Okay.
I love that scene.
I've been meaning to rewatch that. I'll have to rewatch that too. Yeah, okay.
So that's number five. Number four is Saving Private Ryan. So you're right, that's on there. Great film. Excellent film. We should talk about it. Number three, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is my number three, which is just a like childhood favorite of mine. I love every second of that film. Connery and Ford together, like, as father and son, despite not being aged properly, is great. I love it all. I think I started doing a Sean Connery impression based on that film. But as great as it is, it's not as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark at number two, which is a perfect film. You just can't do better than it's great. Well, you can do better because he of course also made Jurassic Park, which is the best film I've ever made. So that's number one.
Well, that's going to be your number one.
So no Jaws, no Schindler's List. Jaws, a film I greatly appreciate. I think is excellent. We have talked about it on Deep Sea the podcast because it has got sharks in it. But it's not a film I go back to very often. I'm not drawn back to it. It's great. It's perfect. It's wonderful. It just doesn't. I'm very compelled to watch it when the likes of Deep Blue Sea is out there, which I prefer. And Schindler's List is also excellent and well made, but I never need to see it ever again. So
so you're saying you would only classify something as a great movie if you have to rewatch?
No, that's all I'm saying. Schindler's List is a great film, but this is my favorite five. This is the five that I like the most, which I want to watch the most, I guess. And the only really serious one on this list is Saving Private Ryan. The rest are all just like popcorn stuff. And this has enough else going on in it to make it like an action and entertaining film that also just happens to be horribly depressing if you think about it too much. Like The Great Escape. If you think about The Great Escape too much, it's horribly depressing. So we don't. We just have fun with hey, it's the 4th of July in prison.
That's right.
Hey, poor Ives. I'm like number six. So
that is definitely
Jaws would probably be number six, and number seven would probably be The Lost World Jurassic Park, which I know is a heavily flawed film.
Really? And I don't like, I know you don't like that.
I do really like that film. I love it. It's my favorite of the sequels. It's number three that I'm not a big fan of, but would still be high up there in a Joe Johnson list. It's just, it's got dinosaurs in it. That's what you really need to do.
That's all you need, just to make you happy. Just put a dinosaur in.
Basically, every film should.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Jay Sanders? Where they can find Jay?
Oh my God. I am genuinely offended.
I can imagine. So, Jay, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Sure. You can find me at Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. And my personal site is lifeversusfilm.com, life vs film. Not a lot goes on there, but when I do write stuff, it does work its way over there as well. And you can follow me all over most social media at Deep Blue Sea Pod. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Threads, I think, one now as well. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can send me an email at moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on Twitter. So, Jay, thank you very much for joining me this week. I will be back on Monday with a new guest, but then Jay will be back on Tuesday. So we will see you again on Tuesday, Jay.
Yeah, I'll see you then.
But until then, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.